There are religious denominations in the United States that recognize LGBT persons as bearing special gifts from God and embrace their participation in membership and leadership roles. There are also denominations that seem to come close to building their entire theology around the condemnation and rejection of LGBT persons. And now, the confusing case of an openly gay Methodist bishop has been making headlines, and I am very grateful to be joined right now by Bishop Karen Olivito, a leader in the Western District of the United Methodist Church. Bishop Olivito, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much. It's good to be with you today.
I'd like you to begin, if you would, by giving us just a brief description of your ministry. As I understand it, you were elevated to bishop with full knowledge of your sexual orientation. So how did we get from there to where we are now?
Well, I've been in ordained ministry since 1982 and went to San Francisco in 1989 hearing a call to do campus ministry because I felt that we were missing a couple of generations, haven't reached them with the gospel. And while there, was invited to take a church, even though my membership was in the New York Annual Conference. That church wanted an openly LGBTQ person. Mm-hmm. They knew I was a lesbian, and I did what I knew as a good United Methodist person does. I went into the closet when I became their pastor. Mm-hmm. And they sat me down and they said, "No, that's not what we want of you. If you're going to be our pastor, we want you to be your most authentic self. Mm-hmm. So we want you to be fully you, and we have your back." And it was a powerful ministry we shared for 12 years, and I'm very grateful for their challenge. The West has a different understanding of diversity and celebrating diversity than I think the rest of the United Methodist Church, mainly because we are a highly diverse jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. And so we've come to see God at work in people's lives who are different from our own and see that when we come together in all our diversity, we begin to see the face of God more clearly. So I've been out since 1992, and it's not been an issue. I've just been able to do my ministry, live fully authentically, and I struggled with the call to the episcopacy for a number of years. Many people saw the gifts and graces in me for that position, and I knew where the larger church stands, and I didn't want to be harmed, and I didn't want to harm the church I love dearly. Mm-hmm. But then God's call was just too great. I really think that at this moment in time, the gifts I have, the fruits that have been evident in my ministry would bring something to the role of the episcopacy. So mm-hmm. So I said yes. You know, we run a very democratic way of doing our elections. So there were 9 of us who allowed our names to be lifted up, to be considered. It was a very prayerful experience, a real experience of discernment as all of us, the 9 of us, as well as all the delegates, really sank into prayer and saying, you know, what does God require of us in this moment? And I was on the 17th ballot, elected 88-0. At once I was elected, another jurisdiction, a member of another jurisdiction, brought forth a question of law asking if a self-avowed practicing homosexual who's in a legal marriage can be nominated, elected, consecrated, and assigned. And so that went to the Judicial Council, which just happened in April, and they ruled that, in fact, the nomination, election, and assignment stood. Mm-hmm. They had questions about the consecration, but admitted that I was an elder in good standing, which is the requirement to be considered a bishop. But what they did was they stretched our definition. We have a definition of self-avowed practicing homosexual. And that's a very narrow definition. It says that basically you tell someone you were having genital contact with a member of the same gender. Mm-hmm. And they stretch that to say if you have a marriage license, you are in fact self-avowed practicing, because what they've done is reduced our understanding of marriage, mm-hmm. which, you know, in the United Methodist Church, we talk about love, we talk about covenant, we talk about care for one another. They've reduced it now, gay or straight, to mean you're having genital contact.
Mm-hmm.
And so that means going forward, it will be very difficult for someone who's married in a same-sex relationship to be considered a bishop. It will also make it difficult, because we have LGBT people serving at every level of the church. We always have.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the first gay bishop. I'm the first openly gay bishop. But now it will make it difficult while the United States moves forward in recognizing LGBTQ civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
The United Methodist Church is actually moving a step backwards from that, I think.
This just exposes, doesn't it, how broad a split actually exists within the United Methodist Church on LGBTQ matters.
You know, Welton, I think we've been split from the very beginning in 1972, when a very pastoral response to the new gay liberation movement, right? The United Methodist Church was created right after Stonewall. And as we created our social principles, there was a very pastoral response to that that said homosexuals no less than heterosexuals are people of sacred worth. And it was a very beautiful, it wasn't condemning and it wasn't condoning, it was very pastoral. And at the last minute in 1972, the line was added to this very pastoral statement that said, however, we consider the practice of homosexuality incompatible with Christian teaching, without any study of what it means to practice one's sexual orientation, and without any study of what Christian teaching it's based on. And that has been the hinge which upon the confusion within the United Methodist Church exists. So at one point, we talk about LGBTQ people should have their civil rights
mm-hmm.
protected. And yet, we say, however, they cannot have rights, both R-I-G-H-T-S and R-I-T-E-S, in the United Methodist Church. We're a very divided church, and we've not been able to do the obvious, and that is to say we're not of one mind. If we could say that, I think we would find ourselves in a place of healing and a place of focusing truly on our mission to make disciples of Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world.
In your instance, at least on the surface, the first division was regional. I am assuming that the issue is far more complicated than just a regional difference.
Well, what's fascinating in my experience, I have been no stranger to controversy in the United Methodist Church, but since my election and assignment, I cannot tell you, I have received boxes of emails and cards and letters, people sharing with me their story, their joy at reclaiming the church they knew the United Methodist Church could be,
mm-hmm.
people sharing about their own struggles to come out, their own struggles to accept their LGBTQ children, but just all these boxes of letters saying thank you.
Yeah.
I've received less than 36 angry letters, which says to me, by and large, the people in the pews are in a much different place than our rules.
Mm-hmm. So church law forbids ordination of anyone who is, quote, a self-avowed practicing homosexual. You don't hide your sexuality, and you're also married. What's this doing to you and your family?
Robin, my spouse, who's a deaconess in the United Methodist Church, which is a lay order of people who feel that they are called in their profession to serve through love, justice, and service, we met at junior high church camp.
Mm-hmm.
So we've known each other for about 27 years. We've been together 17 years and been married for just a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
We share our commitment to service
mm-hmm.
and our commitment to extending God's love. And so we've stayed grounded in that. We prayed long and hard to decide should I allow my name to go forward or not? Mm-hmm. I was really fearful. And one day we had a come to Jesus moment of, you know, if I'm feeling called to this, I need to say yes now or else let it go. Mm-hmm. And so we were sitting and chatting, and she said, you know what? Perfect love casts out all fear. Mm-hmm. And we sat with that scripture for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we said, you know what? This might be what's next for us. Mm-hmm. And we went to bed that night, got up the next morning, and heard about the Orlando Pulse nightclub shooting, where dozens of LGBTQ, largely Latino, Latina folks were murdered in a shooting spree. Mm-hmm. And actually, that confirmed for us that it's time for an LGBTQ voice to be at the table. Because the United Methodist Church has done a really good job of making homosexuality an issue, mm-hmm. and talking around LGBTQ people, but not talking with them, and not having our experience of God, our commitment to walk with Jesus, our love of God's people, to inform the conversation.
Mm-hmm. You know, from doing a whole lot of counseling and just also a lot of personal conversations, I know all too well how hurt LGBTQ people of faith are by exclusionary policies and actions on the part of organized religion. Who is really the ones getting hurt in this controversy?
Thank you for that insight. Because, you know, for the United Methodist Church, we have three general rules. Do no harm, do good, and follow God's ordinances to stay connected to God. And so when I hear that harm has been done to the church because of my election, I have to say, what is the harm? What is the harm when, one, a whole group of people have experienced healing in this? What is the harm when I'm able to share my gifts fully with an area and share my vision for to have us move into and live into beloved community together, where the fruits of my ministry are evident? Where is the harm? And if it's just about breaking a rule, Jesus modeled something for us about rule breaking. We don't break rules without great thought and consideration of what's moral and just, but Jesus broke rules when people were prevented from their achieving full healing and wholeness. Mm-hmm. And I think the rule that was broken, those rules around LGBTQ people in the United Methodist Church is doing tremendous harm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if the only harm that we've done is to break a rule, I'm not sure if harm has really been done.
Yeah. Bishop Karen Olivito is the first openly gay United Methodist bishop. She leads the Mountain Sky area of the denomination, which covers 400 churches in 5 western states. Bishop Olivito, thank you for being with us on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much for this time together.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. There are people listening to this show today who are feeling alone and afraid. They may be at a loss to understand how the values this country presents on the world stage have changed so completely and so quickly. Or they may be incredibly angry, caught up in the cycle of rage that seems to have infected our public discourse. We hear from them every week, and we know this program and your generous support for this program makes an enormous difference. And a man told me not long ago, I don't know what I would do if I didn't get to sit down Sunday afternoon and listen to your show. And so for them and for myself, I want to say thank you. If you've heard something on State of Belief this week that you found to be helpful, I urge you to share it with others who might also benefit from hearing it. It's easy to do. That it's easy to do that on Facebook and Twitter. Direct them to stateofbelief.com, where they'll find full episodes, an in-depth archive, extended interviews, transcripts, and links mentioned in the show. That's stateofbelief.com. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. Ray Kirstein is our superb producer. Have a great Memorial Day weekend, everyone. But be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersections of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.